Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All About Romance. I'm your host, Tricia Harley McCarthy, a platform for writers, authors, and poets alike who love everything about romance, just like I do. Today's special guest is Dawn Wright. She's a romance author who penned a series called The Capital Trilogy, which I'm very excited to learn more about. Please join me as I interview Dawn about her career and her books and anything else that comes up in the conversation. Enjoy.
Thank you and welcome to All About Romance. We have a great guest today. I'm excited to bring Dawn Wright on the show. She, as I said in the intro, she penned a trilogy about DC, which I think is really cool. I love those types of romances. And we were chatting before, so I'm going to bring her on. But before I do that, I just wanted to thank everybody who has supported me on Ice, my hockey romance, and it's getting rave reviews on Goodreads and Amazon. And I want to thank you all from the bottom of my heart for all your support and your continued support. So let me bring on Dawn. Dawn, I'm having, hold on. Okay, here we go. Okay, you there?
I'm there. How are you?
I got a little panicky because I started to pull you on, and all of a sudden my whole screen refreshed. I'm like, ah! But other than that, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Yes, I'm
Thank
a little
so
tired from
me,
book
Trisha.
Tours. Yes, I'm so happy to have you. It's been, we started this process, I don't know, about a month or two ago. I'm so blessed. Yes, I am so blessed to have so many people who want to be on the show. And you're like my 20th show. So just wanted to let you know that.
But that's a good number.
I love 20. Yes, it's a good number. Yes. So, Dawn, tell me about these books of yours. They look great.
Thank you so much. Okay. It's like a whirlwind of a description. So we'll start here. I'll start with my inspiration. Back in 2012, when I was finishing up my master's, I had always attempted to write a book, and I just felt like this is insurmountable. Like, who finishes a book? Which is why I can understand the difficulty of beginning authors when they're just like, I don't know how to do this. I get that. Like, if you're an aspiring author, you're not alone. And it is very true what published authors say. You just have to sit down and do it, even if it's a little at a time. You'll know when you have the right story, when you don't want to do anything else and you just want to sit there and write that book and you just close out the whole world. And so I was in college 2012 and it's time for me to graduate, and I had two college classes left to get my master's, and I was like, okay, I got to put this away. You know, I got one class talking about, you know, financial planning, and the other one was talking about, you know, college success. And I was like, one is EVPs, and the other one is, you know, okay. And I was like, but still, it's time to put the book away. It's becoming a distraction. So I want to say around October, I had some material down, and then December was my final, you know, class time. It was like my graduation date. So I put it down, and I came back to it. Now, why did I start the book? I started the book because I actually was a huge late fan of Sex and the City. And so I know it, you know, sometimes it can be a little trite to be like, oh, you know, this is my inspiration from this show, whatever. But this is how it happened. I was reading a very popular trilogy. And when I tell you it's popular, it's very popular. And it was the middle of the second book. And I was like, that's it. If they have sex one more time. And I was like, okay, well. I was like, don't get mad. That's the way it all did it. And I was just like, but I just wanted, you know, some substance. So don't get me wrong. I enjoyed the trilogy, but I couldn't finish it. I just couldn't. So I put that away. And I enjoyed the movies more than the book because I don't have to do no work, just watch it. So I put that away, and I was like, where is Sex and the City? Like, I cannot believe these girls are gone. And I finished the series. Like, I started and finished the series after it aired. And movie number one got me to, you know, go into the series because I was like, what is the fuss about these four women? Come on, it looks silly and it looks superficial. And, you know, it was brilliant. As superficial as it could be, Sex and the City was brilliant. You have four women, they're friends. It's unrealistic, you know, in the sense that, you know, grown women don't have that kind of time to get together. At the same time, it lacked diversity, and that was the thing I wanted to do differently. And I was like, okay, I want to continue something for us women. It wasn't that no one else was doing that, but, it, you know, things had moved on. You know, fantasy had taken over Game of Thrones and this, that, and the other. And I was like, but what about us ladies? And, you know, the erotic period. So I was like, okay, let's go back to friendship because, you know, I was like, if I can't have Sex in the City, I need to do my own Sex in the City, like my own, like, kind of inspiration. And I met Sarah Jessica Parker, and I even told her, I said, look, I was just like, you are the inspiration for this book, you know, Sex in the City. And, you know, she's very touched and everything. But even she likes, you know, you could tell she likes women's literature and literary books. She doesn't sit around reading, you know, this kind of thing. But still, so when I started it, I was just like, okay, I need my women to be where I'm from, the D.C. area. I know Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. really well. I have roots here. And on top of that, you know, I know the story of diversity, the culture. And so I captured that, and I said, but we're not going to do any men in politics and suits. We're not going to do that. Because every time you watch a TV show, that's all you get is D.C. is about the men. It's about the suits, the power, stopping crises. And I'm like, no, there's more to D.C. than that. So I put the four women in there, and, you know, what a reflection of diversity. And it was very important that these women look like me. Because Sex and the City, I wouldn't change anything. It was tone deaf in the sense of, you know, cultural reflection, but I wouldn't change that. That was the vision of the writer,
right.
And it actually served it well. And I think that everything has, when things are successful, that recipe shouldn't be, you know, disturbed. So I was like, you know, but what about other people who don't get a chance to be reflected like that? So that's what I did. So I know that's, you know, wimpy, but I wanted to.
That's cool. And you met Sarah Jessica Parker and you told her?
I met her twice, actually. Yes, I met her twice, and I told her that, and she's a very sweet, transparent person, but it was important for me. This is the weird thing. When I was watching Sex and the City, I'm not like a big celebrity chaser, but in your head, you always think to yourself a person you would ever meet and the person you would never meet. And I had her on the list of, I would never meet her. Like, she's too big. So when she opened up her shoe store at the casino over here, I was like, I almost passed out when I heard that she was there. And actually, my mom had passed me the message. She was like, you know, Sarah Jessica Parker is, you know, here on the opening day. I was like, you're kidding me. So I was like, okay, I'm going to find out when she's coming back. I have to let her know. So I even have, like, you know, some girls that we just kind of bonded over that, you know, like our love for Sex in the City. And, you know, I have videos that are just so funny. Like, one of them was like, she helped me find the shoe. It's so funny. She's sweet. She's transparent. And then just I had to tell her. And at that time, I only had Capital Encounters published. So I gave her a copy of that. And, I was like, okay, I got that off my chest. Like, you don't always get to meet the person who influences something about you. But I was like, for me, it was important because that show is just, it's my jam. And so I made it reflect career choices, love, friendship, just the disaster of life and bad decision-making skills. Yes, like the stakes, making the stakes high, and, you know, like, I didn't know how this was going to end, and I didn't know it was going to be a trilogy. I got to the end of Capital Encounters, and I was like, oh, my gosh, like, this, like, it can't end like this. And so I remember my boyfriend was just getting used to me pecking away and pecking. He was like, you're doing a lot of typing. And I was like, hey, babe, this is a story. I was like, I'm done with book one. He was like, yes, kind of like I get you back to myself type thing. I was like, I had to do a book too. He's like, again? I was like, dude, I'm going to be an author. This is what we do, dear. You still for the rest of your life, you're going to see me packing away. But then he was like, oh,
exactly.
Man. Well, what is that book about? Is it going to sell? Blah, 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 blah. He's all about the, you know, the bottom line. So finish with book two.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thank God. And then I was like, sir, there's going to be a book three. And he was like, girl. And he was like, get out of here. I was like, yep. He's used to it, but sometimes he's like, stupid books. Because, you know, like, he's like, you can't do this? I was like, yeah, I got to go right. He's like, man, stupid books. I'm like, you'll be all right. He's supportive,
yeah.
Though, but it's he couldn't mentally wrap himself around that ongoing process.
Yeah, that's cool. I had a similar experience when I started writing, because my first book came out, my first book I published was in 2012. Believe it or not, and it took me 5 years.
Okay.
But what inspired
yeah.
me was Helen Fielding, who wrote Bridget Jones' Diary. And if you've ever seen that movie, that spoke to me so loudly, you know, when I first
yeah.
saw it. I was like, oh my gosh. And I started writing fan fiction. And from there,
yeah.
I thought, you know, why don't I write my own book? And I did. So it was really fun. And but I wrote it based on my experiences, just like you did. And, you know, but I like how you brought the diversity forward, because, like I mentioned before on the before we were speaking on the show about the interracial romances are becoming really popular and
yeah.
very, very, you know, accepted, you know, as opposed to before when it was just usually just the muscly white guy, you know, cover, and that's pretty much all you see in the marketplace. And I mean,
yeah,
not to say
yeah.
that those white guys aren't good looking, but, you know, diversity, you want to
mm-hmm.
people want to be relatable to, you know, their life too, you know. So that's, I love
yeah.
that. Hey, we've got our
yeah.
first caller. Are you ready to take a call?
I am.
Okay, hold on. Hello. This is
Hello.
Trish.
How are you?
And Dawn. Hi, Susan. How are you?
Hi
there. Hey,
Dawn. How are y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I was on earlier listening, but my connection's not so great.
So, yeah, you were popping in and out like a,
no.
like a popcorn.
It does.
Yeah.
It's pretty cloudy where I'm at right now, so. But, yes, I
yeah.
just called in to say hello, and nice. And, I mean, I've been listening in a little bit.
I can definitely hear you well.
Dawn, good. Do you have a question for Dawn? Because I just love her. Have you seen her covers? Did you see her covers? They're beautiful.
No, ma'am, I haven't yet. Are you on Instagram? I may be following you. Some of them I know is new to me, so.
I am.
Okay.
I am under author Dawn Wright.
Okay, yeah, I think.
Or you actually be Dawn Wright _ author, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am, I'm listening in, but I'm very interested in reading some of what you got.
Yeah.
I love making different demographics.
Love it. Yeah, having a show like this, it gives us a whole opportunity to interact with people of all, you know, backgrounds and
yes.
and different, and what's important to authors. And, you know, another aspect of writing romance these days is about mental health. That's another
yeah.
issue that's coming to the forefront, which is very important, and it's very relatable to a lot of people, including myself. And so that actually comes up in my book
mm-hmm.
On Ice about mental health. So
right.
it's I love how all of this is just culminating together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The more
you're having more
better.
Of a community. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dawn, are you on Facebook?
I am. I'm there as, now there I'm author Dawn Wright. On IG, I'm Dawn Wright _ author.
Okay.
And I'm on Twitter.
Okay. I'll look for you on Facebook.
Yeah.
Tell me what has been your biggest challenge writing a trilogy?
Definitely number one, you want to keep up with the information, but I swear the more, I'm not much of a chart person, definitely like, oh, what's her eye color? What's her, you know, I can mentally remember people's weight, my character's weight, but like his hair or eye color, that could be a little tricky. Also characteristics like, do they have sisters and stuff like that? That is the tricky part, running all the information from one book to the other. And then my book has a lot of twists. So I had to go back and be like, okay, this twist sounds good, but is there any twist that you may put that could contradict something that was, you know, said earlier? And when I went back and found that it was just like a green light, and you're like, yes. And I will say the worst part about doing a trilogy or a series has to be the editing. Because you, I will say standalone, I never craved writing a standalone so bad when I was writing this trilogy. Because when it came time to edit it, I'm rotating four characters. I'm cussing in my head saying, I will never do this again. And it was like, it had to be seamless. And, you know, luckily my readers found out, you know, found that to be, you know, like the case. They were like, I normally wouldn't do this many characters, but I'm like, hey, if everybody supports Game of Thrones, you can do four characters. But, you know, like, I understand. So I had to write kind of episodically so that way I think what made it easy for me is that I'm a soap opera lover. I watched One Arm Bone Beautiful since I was a kid. Blame my mom. So in my head, that was what helped. that's what helped.
I watched it too, so I'm not. You're not alone. I watched it too, but I got tired of the same storyline over and over again. The same characters in the same predicament, you know.
Yes, I think the problem with soaps is that you're trying to write, you're trying to outdo these characters in their lives every single day, and I think that becomes hard. And then what I find that, and you can relate this to writing, plot, having a plot-driven anything is really good, but what I think, like, for example, Grey's Anatomy, what makes that such a dynamic show over the course of time is the fact that it is character-driven. With a little bit of plot explosions. Like, if you can make stuff character-driven, you can hang on to your audience for life. You really can. Like, we can root for Steve until the day we die. And, you know, that was one of the things for my book was how to show that this character has evolved, because I was like, I will not end this book with these girls not having any kind of evolution. That's how I think you could fail a reader. And also, too, like, doing... You could do it happily ever after, but you have to be careful that it doesn't look trite, you know? And it's just like, I have four characters. So somebody can get the trite ending, but you definitely have to have that, well, that's life. Because somebody said, one of your characters, I wish had a better, but it didn't stop them from giving it all 5 stars. And I'm like, me too. But this is how her life ended up.
Yeah. And the third book of my series, one of the characters dies, and people are going, what did you do? What did you do? And I'm like, if I ended it like the rest of the other two books, it would be boring, you know? I'm sorry. But, you know?
But you didn't do it. It was the fate. It was the fate of the character. You did not do that. You didn't do it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll plead the fifth on that one. Yeah.
Oh, you had a little hand. You're like, let me just push you to the edge of the cliff. Sorry, you fell over the cliff.
And, you know, and they're so upset with me. And I'm like, I did my job, because if they get so involved with your character, you've done a good job, right?
Right. You definitely did.
What is your call name again?
Susan.
I'll say this as a reader. I'm like saying, what were you thinking? And you get like, killing him. I'm like, what were you thinking?
Are you sure we have a name?
Yeah, Susan. Like, you know, in the book, I'm like, yeah, do what now? Go ahead.
What's your name? Susan is the caller's name.
Susan? Okay.
Susan. Okay. So sometimes I'll hear a name and I forget it. Okay, there we go.
Yep. That's what I'll be saying.
Were you addressing that question to me?
Yes, I'm like, isn't that something like, did you kill them off or whatever, and got the little, you got one coming out there stirring up the side. I was like, what are you thinking? So I'm like, then I love it because of the twists and turns in there. You love it. Like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to keep reading.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think, Dawn, you're like me. You like the angsty. Don't you like the angsty stories, the twists and turns? Because I love that. That's what I write, totally.
I do. I like when I'm like, I don't know what is going on in here, and I don't know how it's going to end, but we'll all make it through the cliff somehow.
Yep.
Yep.
But I'm like, baby, you got to burn a little. You got to burn a little.
Yeah.
Yeah. Baby, you got to burn a little. I love
and
that.
Yeah.
That's a great mantra.
And have an easy life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. And, you know, and I've got one review that said these characters need therapy. Well, welcome to life. We all need therapy, right?
Yeah, but that makes it beautiful. Like those characters.
I know.
Like, I don't know what's going on in your head, but I love it. Like, I don't know. Like, you're a hot mess, and I love it. Like, who doesn't like a hot mess character as long as there's some sense to it? You know.
That's right.
Exactly, and they're funny. They're engaging. They're, you know, they're human, and you know, that's
what
the whole
my character
key. Oh, yeah? Okay.
That's definitely my character, Amber. Some people are like, she is a mess. I was like, look, Amber has to do what she has to do.
I'm gonna ask you a question I've never asked anyone.
Sure.
Why should people read your book? Your book.
Well, people should read my book because I think it has a very unique voice where it's that surprise element, like, Yeah, they're going to be, you know, four friends skipping in the street, happily ever after, and, you know, looking at, you know, Macy's, let's go shopping for a sweater and all that stuff. And, you know, like, you know, it's just like, oh, what, that airy feeling that everything's going to be all right. And also, too, I have to say, so I'll give you an example of my cousin. He was like, you know, I'll read your book. He's like, I got to warn you, I'm a slow reader. And he loves Harry Potter. You know, we're talking 700 pages and whatnot. I was like, how'd you get through Harry Potter then? But he picked up my book and he was just like, I could not stop reading your book. He said, you had one
Aww.
Thing after the other. And I was in I need book two. Yeah, and I was just like, I have to say, if I can sit down and eat a bowl of ice cream with my book, then you got to read it. You know what I mean? Like, for example, I was editing one of my books, and this one I'm going to submit to a literary agent whenever I get my butt going with the whole project. But as I was reading it, I always ask myself, as I'm reading my project, is this the kind of book where you'll turn your back to your significant other and get a bowl of ice cream and be like, not now, just whatever you want to watch on TV is fine, I'm in my book world. I feel like if you can do that, if you feel that way about your own book, you've got a seller. So I feel like people should read my book because they're not going to get what they think they're going to get. And I will also say this, too. There is a huge, like, here's the thing. When you plug in your book online, you have to say what your demographic is. Just like a singer and a reader or an author, you always have to know who your demographic is. So the funny thing is when you're, you know, a 21-year-old pop singer, in your head, you're singing such, you know, light lyrics that you don't think a 50-year-old grandmom is going to want to hear your music. The bass is too loud. The lyrics are trifling. So you're just like, But grandma is blasting that music, and then she'll turn it down when the grandchildren get in the car. So you know what I mean? It's just like it's painful to say this is only for this audience. Like, I think you like it. When I did my book signing event, you know how many older white women came in to buy my book? And I'm telling you, like, they were, even though I wrote it to reach, you know, the minorities, I was like, I also don't want to exclude anybody else. you know, I don't want a white woman to think, oh, well, you know, especially like just because she's older too. And then I had older black women who read the book, the trilogy as well. And so, first of all, regardless of color, I was like loving the fact that older women actually enjoyed my book and spent money on it. And but then the fact too, when it was an older white woman, I was like, that's a great accomplishment that the crossover was that strong. And then when I get a man who wants to buy a book, and it's just like, I've had a few men who will be like, so what's this book about? Now, you want to read it or are you giving it to your wife? I may read it. So, you know, I'm just like, that's dope. Because I'm like, if you can reach, you know, the opposite gender, especially for romance, and if you can reach the audience that, you know, you may not, you may have thought wouldn't care to or whatever, but for me, I always felt like the race was not a factor. I felt like age was going to be the thing where older women would be like, uh-huh, this is too, that's too young. But no.
Nope.
So I don't like the fact that you have to choose a target audience, because I feel like as long as you like romance, I don't want to put an age on you. I don't want to put a salary, you know, what you do for a living. I don't want to cap it like that. I just feel like more than likely women will read this book and that's it. That's it.
Well, it's a testament to your characters, because it doesn't matter who's reading it. If they love the story, then you've done your job. In demographics aside, you know, that's the universal connection for reading, you know? But the story is so good that everyone is connecting with it. Men, women, you know, black, white, yellow, purple, blue, and so that's awesome. That's congratulations on that, by the way. I think that's a great thing.
I hate doing those filters. Like, I hate plugging in those filters, because I'm like, you're telling me, it's like you're asking me, who do you want to touch your book? And I'm like, everyone. Like, I don't want to make it look like, it's not for you. I don't like that, but, you know, Amazon and everybody wants you to do that, and I'm just like, for anybody with a heartbeat, how about that? Over 18.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we all bleed red, so there's nothing exempt from any of us under the skin, and it's such a shame that we have to make it an issue that, we want to have more, you know, inclusiveness, but why does it have to be an issue? What, you know, it should have been there already. You know, that's just me, but, you know, part of it is labeling people, but to get to the forefront of there's this subgenre too. You know, it's not like it's not the accepted version of everything that we've known before. So it's romance is evolving with the times, and I hope it continues. You know, because there's a big thing for the male you know type of readers, and you know people love those books too. In addition to the vampires and, you know, the fantasy and all that. So, you know, and I do write paranormal as well. So that's a big genre too. So it's I love how the diversity is coming to the forefront, but it shouldn't be an issue. You know, it shouldn't be an issue in this day and age. It really shouldn't.
It shouldn't. But I will say this. It is great, too, to capitalize on making sure that the people who, for example, if you have male-on-male readers, you know, if they want something to reflect their community, they know where to go. And just like, you know, the black women know, okay, I want to do like a Sex in the City too, but, you know, I want them to look like me, or, you know, it's like, hey, you know where to go.
Right.
But, you know, and flip side, like you say too, but everybody's welcome, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and I've had men read my books, and they loved them, you know. My husband has it, but, you know, that's another story, though. The husband, the spouses.
I would love to have enough
family members.
Yeah, oh, gosh. I always tell everybody I know, you know, you got to be over 18 years old.
Yeah, that's the only qualification.
It gets naughty,
I got,
yeah.
Um,
not
I
the
did,
worst, it gets
yeah, Yeah, I did a promo on Instagram, and I was looking at my insights and everything, and the demographics was all men, mostly men versus the women. I was shocked.
Ooh, love that.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, wow, okay. So it was a little bit of a race. Well, it was a bit of a racy, you know, picture, but, you know, it had a guy in it too. So some guys don't always like that, and guys get turned off by that, you know, because they don't think that's the average male, you know. But it was pretty interesting to see that.
Well, let me say that when I was in college, Harlequin romance was my thing. Like, I did Anna Martin with the Babysitter's Club, but, you know, before I went off to elementary school, you know, my mom, single family, she couldn't afford preschool, so, you know, she watched me until my brothers came home. So I was sneaking there and start off with Sweet Pickles. And then, you know, like, I was like a self-taught reader and writer. Like, I'm that much into language that I taught myself that. And, like, I tell everyone, I suck at math and science. But, you know, I start off with that, and then Martin, Fear Street, R.L. Stein, and then I went on to Harlequin. And, boy, when you're a virgin reading Harlequin, it's deep for you. You're like, oh.
Yeah. I think for me, my it was Danielle Steele, her books. I just loved her books. And she would, like, come out with one every,
serious.
You know. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
I felt like that was more like my mom's age, so I'd never bothered. But, boy, did Harlequin get me.
Yeah. Actually, her early stuff, Danielle Steele's early stuff, is really good. It's very heartfelt. There's just a lot of culture. So it was some of her stuff is really good. But I'm dating myself too if I I mention Danielle Steele. So let me ask you, who's some of your favorite authors?
Well, you know what? So this is a tricky thing. This is the funny thing.
Yep.
I like Stephen King. I fell in love with his writing style. When I became an adult and I was, you know, when I went off to college, I had to put the books down and pick up textbooks because I was like, you know, I have to focus on my GPA. I became so transformed by college that I didn't make time for reading. Like, I was busy. I got my good grades. I did really well. But I was busy partying. And I was busy, you know, just being distracted by a whole new world. So I didn't read for a long time. And finally, when I graduated, I was like, who are you? You used to be a bookworm, girl. And so then I actually just started to write again. So I have to say the one author, like, I like Terry McMillan because I feel like she's very poetic, very intelligent writing. And I also feel like with Stephen King, I loved how I just felt like something about the way he commanded punctuation and English, just everything. And I was just like, huh, can you really do that with punctuation? Stephen King did it, I guess so. I mean, I wouldn't use the punctuation with, you know, some kind of mark like that, but I was like, oh, wow. You know, maybe it's just me, but I don't know. About him. I felt like he was a little bit of a rule breaker with the rules, but still he didn't do it. So I have to say it'd be those two.
Yeah.
And they're whole opposite.
So
very, very interesting.
So they say to read what you write, you know, make your craft better.
Yeah.
Does that not apply to you? I mean, that's fine. There's no, you know.
Well, you know what?
Because you're.
I didn't plan on being an author at the time that I started penning. Then you're definitely right. Like, it just like that moment when it hit me when I closed the book of the author who I was reading. That's not someone, you know, no shade, but that's not the person I would have mimicked. Or felt influenced by, inspired at all. The inspiration that came from that author was, if you don't like what you're reading, close the book and do it yourself and leave that author alone as well as criticizing them. So that's what I did.
Yeah.
I can thank that author for that. It just put the final nail in my coffin, like, pick up a book and just start. But I feel like one thing that I have a problem with is reading while writing. I'm one of those people who I feel like I have to stay in my bubble so I don't mimic. I can be inspired by someone's style, but I feel like if I explain this right, you should always study people in your world, whether you're a construction worker or whatever, a painter, because it helps you understand everything that you're doing and it brings you closer to your art. No matter what field. But I also have a thing where I can get distracted easily. I'm a Gemini. So I cannot afford to be reading Harry McMillan while writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I'm done writing my book, I always stop and I start writing another book. So I'm like, when will I become a bookworm again? So I'm quite envious of my old self because I used to read more. And now I've just become the writer. And I'm like, this is dangerous.
That's very dangerous. I find that I go through phases. I go through phases where I'm reading, like, every night, and then I just drop off for whatever reason. Or I'm not finding the book appealing or whatever the situation is. Now I'm trying to get back into it, but this book touring is really crazy. And so that takes so much time and effort. And so it's been kind of a balancing act for me, at least. And so tell me, what's the downside of being an indie author, in your opinion?
Oh, as an indie author, number one, you have to do everything yourself. That's a blessing and a curse. You have total control.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, every failure you must own, every success you can celebrate at, you know, your own hands. But you have, like, for example, I'm horrible at newsletters. Anybody who follows me know that. And that I have to own. Also, too, just making sure that you're not a stigma when you say that to people, that they don't take it as, you know, something stigmatic and, you know, defending yourself. Is like, you have to own it. You know, you're an indie author. There's nothing like, oh, well, that's easy. No, it's not. Now, true, there's no real gateway. Anybody can publish junk, like purposeful junk. And like, look, I published a book. We've all seen that one book where it's like, you know.
Yeah.
But there's, how about music that's released from big-time execs, and you know that track was trash. So I can't look at it like that. I just feel like you're responsible for your own. If you're traditionally published, I feel like, you know, that's like a badge of honor. Like, I went to Harvard, you know, not everybody gets into that club, but it doesn't promise you anything either. So either way, whether you are traditional or self-published, you still have to write your book. What I like about the indie side, though, is that no one's going to tell you. You have to change a title. You have to kill a character, shorten it up, chop this off. I mean, I look back on the Capital Trilogy, and I think if anybody ever told me how to do that book differently, I would stab them. Like, no, like, you're not going to tell me to do something different there.
No,
I trust my gut
That's right, exactly. And that's smart, I think, because when you start sending your book out to beta readers or ARCs or whoever, you know, they will have all kinds of opinions about maybe the characters or what you should have done differently. And, you know, like you'd mentioned before, how someone said something about your character should have done this or that. And, but you stay true to yourself. That's the important key.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to stand by your work. Now, on the other hand, you do have to know when some criticism is like, you know, I will say this, I'll give an example. Like the first book, I had my first review, and boy, I was on pins and needles because I was like, I don't have any reviews for this book. And the first reviewer, I was pacing around in the living room, and she, like, I gave that book as a gift. And I remember she's a big supporter of me now, absolutely loves my work, and I love her. But when she picked up Capital Encounters, she kept firing off at me. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I should take my book back. And so, but she asked me, she said, well, she made a comment. She said, what's with all the eyes in here? Honey, you have to show it. Don't say it. You have to show it. And I was like, oh, goodness, now she's complaining. And I was like, you know, why doesn't she just be quiet and read the book? But I tell you what, that advice, we all remember certain pieces of advice, and you kind of lose some along the way when you write. But I applied that going forward. I'm like, Dawn, are you saying it or are you showing it? And that made me a better person. She is tough, and it helps. She was not, in the end, she was like, I love the book. I was like, what? I was expecting you to just be like, it's in the trash. But no, she loved it. But one thing about her is that she's not easy with 5 stars. I think she's only given me 4 maybe at the most. I think all books were 4, and she absolutely loved them. But she was like, hey, I don't give 5 easily. I was like, I can respect that.
Yeah.
4 is great.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and Melanie James, she's a USA bestseller. She was on the show a few weeks ago, and she said she doesn't even look at reviews anymore because it'll tear your guts out, you know? It's for the readers. It's not for the authors.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love that advice. I just, yeah.
I can. Yeah. And it can, because I remember one review, I think it was for Capital Encounters, and it was the first negative one, and it does gut you a little bit. And it's funny because if you're not careful, that one review can override all the positives. Everybody knows that.
Right.
But
yeah.
At the same time, sometimes, you can have a troll, you can have a nasty person, but sometimes somebody is saying something that is noteworthy. So I feel like it's at your own risk if you want to read it or not, but I feel like while not into the celebrity life and everything, I will say this, if those people can face their critics, we should be able to as well, because you put that art out there. So you don't always put the good in your head. Sometimes you do. Like I say, you always act up troll, but sometimes you do have to face the music and realize, well, what is it that this person didn't like? Because sometimes that can inspire your next book. You know, it can in some odd way help you grow just when someone sincerely doesn't like your work. So I kind of I don't like getting negative feedback, but if it's coming from a true place, then I'll make myself face the music because I'm like, and whether it eats me up or not, that's something I have to, I always tell myself, you got to have to expand and you got to trust in your stuff.
Exactly. Well, we're coming down on our time here. And this 45 minutes has gone by fast, hasn't it? It always does.
Yeah, because it was so fun.
So people can find you on Facebook at author Dawn Wright, and Wright is spelled W-R-I-G-H-T, and also on Instagram at Dawn Wright Author.
Correct.
And all your books are on – where are your books available?
They're Amazon and Barnes & Noble online, Books A Million online as well. Yeah.
Great. So it's the Capital Trilogy, and I totally recommend that anyone who's listening go check it out. I'm going to check it out. I just have so many to read, but I'm definitely going to read this trilogy because I love
Aww.
Series, and definitely you write very similar to me. So I'm always looking out for those types of books.
Thank you, Trisha. Yeah,
I'm so glad you were on the show.
Yes, thank you.
That's great.
Nice I was looking forward to this interview for so long.
Me too, and I'm so glad we finally connected. And so I just want to advise everyone that our next guest will be Alana Jardin, another author, next week. And let's see. On Ice is doing fantastic. If you get a chance to get look up On Ice, it's a hockey romance. If you like hockey, definitely check that out. A lot of angst in that book, boy. I'm telling you.
Thank you for being here, Susan. Thank you for calling in and supporting us. And I hope everyone had a happy New Year. And thank you for being with us, Dawn. It was an honor. And you come on anytime you want. Goodbye, everybody.
Oh,
have a great evening. Take care. Okay.
Bye.
Will do. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.